Welcome to the Kiljan Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Dunbar. As always, keep listening for the CPD code within the episode. You're joining us for the part two of my conversation with the head of Kiljan Technical Department, Dr. Matthew Davies, where it's all about insect identification. Let's get back into it. So anyone can have a go at identifying an insect, right? But it won't necessarily make it a sort of valid identification. So I guess from that side of things, what sort of training do you recommend for insect identification?
Do you know, that's a really good question because there aren't many sort of formal routes training-wise. Cheeky plug, I'll get that out of the way first.
Go on.
Kiljan, I have an insect identification course. And what we try and do is expose people to a really large number of samples.
Yeah.
And that sort of experience is a big part of it. Just the sheer number of samples that you can work through over time and put that effort in is a big thing. And we also lay out on the tables a huge range of the various textbooks and entomological resources and point people towards those. So that day course gives people a real flavour for it. But of course, you can't cover every single species in a single day. We sort of set people on the right path.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to do a PhD alongside my Kiljan work. It was part funded by Kiljan, and in that study we looked at flying insects in hospitals.
Yep.
We were collecting them from catch trays of the UV light fly units and also the sticky boards, the glue boards from those UV light units. Not just flying insects are on there, of course.
Yep.
You'll get other things as well. And I just literally worked through thousands and thousands and thousands of samples over like a 6-year period. And that really beefed up my experience alongside the samples at Kiljan. So there is a huge amount of time involved.
Yeah.
And thinking of my colleague, Jonathan, who's decades and decades of experience of dealing with insect samples.
Yeah.
It is that real time factor. Murray before that, with the Insect ID service, again, just sheer determination, grit, and volume of work. And then Maureen O'Shea before that, again, a similar example, lots of professional experience in simply working with those insect samples. I think on a training route as well, I'm really happy to say a few of the team
from
Kiljan Technical are going through the Associate Certified Entomologist International certification.
That's right.
With the Entomological Society of America, the ESA, and there's an insect identification component of that. And I'll sort of hold Melvin Knapp up, our friend and colleague. He was the first of us to go through that process.
That's right.
And that gives us some real skills and attaches some formality to it. Jonathan as well, with his experience and skills, is a fellow of the Royal Entomological Society.
So amazing.
A commission of his knowledge and skills there. So yeah, there are some academic routes, but there are a good number of, I don't like to use the word amateur, but amateur or hobbyist entomologists out there that with certain insect groups would wipe the floor with us because it's their devoted passion.
That's it.
And they've specialised in that area.
Yep.
So it's, I think I would go for the real details stuff. You can go to the Royal Entomological Society in England and go on their website, Royal Entsoc, and you can download their handbooks for identification of insects.
Okay.
Insects. A good range of those are a PDF available now.
Awesome.
Which I think is a positive thing. My worry is some of the texts that we've got, they exist in physical form.
Yeah,
there's a finite number of those books available in the world,
yeah.
And eventually some of those will degrade and fall away. So I do worry about losing some of the more slightly obscure resources. To see things become digitized and then preserved in time,
that's it.
Is a good feature. Yeah, definitely.
That's amazing. So as with many things in life, it's study and practice, isn't it? At the end of the day, that's all it boils down to, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And I think a certain number of people will always be very lucky to have a mentor as well. And I've been very lucky in earlier parts of my career to have various people help me out and give me that tutelage, sort of one-to-one sort of supervision as well. So maybe sort of latch onto somebody that loves their insects and they'll know what you can that way as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. So sort of with that in mind, if anyone would like to sort of purchase insect-related equipment for identification or anything like that, do you have any sort of trusted go-to places that you fall into?
Yeah, sure. We've got microscopes from Brunel, and, you know, obviously don't normally sort of recommend particular companies, but that's a fact. That's where we've gone for some of our equipment there.
Yep.
They're reliable and knowledgeable. Having the right tools and the right microscope is a real help.
Yeah.
I still carry a times 10 hand lens for in the field recognition.
Yep.
And I'll use the word recognition rather than true formal identification.
Yeah, that's an important distinction to make, isn't it? Yeah.
So that'll give me a real good idea in the field. And literally for my inspections and site work, I'm carrying around some sample pots to take those insects back.
Yep.
To the laboratory, to the microscope. And if needs be, I'll pass them on to Jonathan. And that's for my own work. But yeah, retaining the samples, collecting them, taking time, mm-hmm. not rushing to a conclusion, having the right tools, having a professional microscope and all the relevant reference books is the main thing. I think, do we delve into the world of image recognition and AI and apps and things? We probably should.
Yeah, definitely. So what is your stance on the sort of use of AI to identify things? There are many apps out there that will sort of help you with that.
There are. I would say a bit of a deviation here.
Mm-hmm.
I have used a really, really good app to help with identification of broad-leaved weeds.
Wow.
Which is a bit of a niche taste. Yeah. It was a part of a course that I did to allow Killgerm to sell and distribute a particular herbicide. We needed a basis qualified advisor in that respect. And that app was actually pretty good and pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the insect side of things, I probably don't currently have enough knowledge of insect recognition, sort of image recognition software and identification apps to give a full sort of breakdown and summary. I have attempted to use some of the image recognition software, and I did write a short article in Pest Control News.
Yeah,
I sort of pitted myself against image recognition. I think the weakness is with insects, you're given an image, either from the internet or from a mobile phone photo, and it's one image.
That's it.
And it might be top down, and we can't always see the detailed identification features.
That's it. Yeah,
that remain in the rest of the sample, and that's where software can only be as good as the information that you put in. And if you don't give it all the information, then we might not get the same result. So we'll always favour, in fact encourage, stipulate, I should even say, the sending in of physical samples.
Definitely.
The only way to see all the identification features currently. We do receive photographs from people,
mm-hmm.
from our customers, and nearly always we have to write back and say, please return with a physical specimen.
That's
the only way we can give a reliable ID.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned the sort of the app for the plants, because obviously identifying features of a plant, you know, the patterns on the leaves or whatever it may be, they're a lot easier to spot than some of the tiny detail on some of the insects, right? The shape of the antenna of the Tribolium flower beetles, or the distance behind the eyes of Oryzophilus grain beetles, right?
It's
these tiny little things, and you can't just pick it up. And the cameras, as amazing as they are, you know, we live in a golden era of technology.
Yeah.
Normal phone cameras are not able to pick up that sort of detail, are they?
That's it. And I'll never be too boring and grumpy to poo-poo it and, you know, embrace technology at the right time and so on. And I'll always sort of look forwards. But yeah, certainly the physical samples are still the way forward, which is good. We're still in a job, guys. So yeah.
That's it. Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So I guess that leads us quite nicely onto my next question, which is, what are the biggest challenges for the insect ID team that you guys come across?
Yeah, I would say it's more the practicalities of it.
Mm.
With it being pest control, when we receive a sample from our customers, they're going to struggle sometimes because the member of public might have presented it to them on a bit of sellotape.
Yeah.
So we're already fighting a losing battle there because mm-hmm. it's completely obscured and covered in gloop. It may have been squashed over enthusiastically as well by a client, and you're left with bits of an insect to look at rather than a full specimen. Sometimes it's already been treated with an insecticide, and some oil-based ones, you can sort of see that coating on it.
Yeah.
And that can obscure it. We even get samples sent in from like the fly strips, and they're really heavily coated with glue and very difficult to work with.
Yeah.
Occasionally we get the fly bags sent in, and I don't recommend that because they stink.
Oh yeah, it's horrendous.
So yeah, usually it's the quality of the sample.
Okay.
Fragmented, contaminated, sprayed, squashed, various bits and pieces missing. And we can only give partial or higher level identifications. Higher level as in less detail, rather than down to species level. But yeah, quality of the specimen is usually the usually the one.
Definitely.
Occasionally, the biggest challenge would be coping with the demand, the upsurge of samples in summer.
Yeah.
That's undoubtedly our peak time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, we do all that, work hard, graft, and get those results out.
That's it, yeah. It sort of kind of went unmentioned a little bit, but obviously we've been talking about adult versions of the insects. Is there a possibility, obviously, if it's an early stage of infestation, someone came across some larvae, to potentially send them over to you guys? Is that something that can be done?
It is, and I lightheartedly bring this up on the training courses.
Yeah.
I tell the folks on the course, yes, we can identify, as an example, fly larvae.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to identify an adult fly, for sure.
Yeah.
And when I'm chatting to customers, a bit sort of tongue-in-cheek, oh, guys, you know, just wait 4 weeks, wait for the full life cycle to develop through to adult and send me the adult fly. And the call is, no, Matt, we're not hanging on. There's maggots everywhere.
Yeah.
Need an answer. Get on with it. Identify our maggot sample. And, of course, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure it's packaged securely, like we said, in the 30ml style sample tube. A week's solution of alcohol is great to preserve it, or if that's not to hand, then just water will keep it plump and stop it from drying out, and that would make it difficult to identify. But yeah, we can deal with the juvenile stages as well as adults.
Amazing.
Just I just need to work a bit harder.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So.
No, that's fair enough. Just a quick interruption to give you your final CPD code for 2025. This episode's code is species-CPD-672. That's species-CPD-672. And back to the podcast. So you've mentioned, obviously, the Kilgem sister companies earlier, in the earlier part of the podcast. And any of the other Kilgem counterparts that are offering that sort of service as well?
They are. I think certainly the team in Germany have an insect identification service. And that's a big part of what they offer. You know, there's a team of entomologists there.
Yep.
And they're very busy with that work. And, you know, the rest of the technical guys throughout Europe, they've certainly got skills for insect identification. I know Joseph in Spain does a good amount of insect ID.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the German one, I say, would be the most of a formal service with greater numbers. And it's just great to have that team throughout the world that we can rely on. There's plenty of skill there.
Definitely. I guess just sort of as we're talking, you know, use of dichotomous keys is an important part of the process. But a lot of the time, it's useful to have a sample to kind of compare it to, in a way. So are there any places that provide that sort of service in the UK where you can buy live insect samples, or potentially ones that you can refer to?
Yes, there are a few places. There is a company called Blades Biological that deal with insect samples.
Okay.
Sort of like on the educational side of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, fruit flies for schools.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of
nice.
Aspect, you know, takes you back to high school or something like that. So they've got a range of things. It's not a massive range, but they've got some samples mm-hmm. available. I have occasionally bought insect samples from the insect supplies unit.
Okay.
At the Food and Environment Research Agency. So people could go down that route. I don't want to unwittingly swamp those folks there with a huge demand for samples. But yeah, they have an insect rearing facility.
Amazing.
And supply insects for research, testing and so on. So
yeah.
I have dipped into that before.
Awesome.
Yeah, there are options out there. I think most people, though, collect as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of got to make your own collection of insects.
Yeah.
And we're all quite guarded of our supply of insects at Kilgem.
Definitely.
We're very grateful that Jonathan's produced various things for us.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much for our consumption, because we did talk about how the samples can be damaged when they come in.
Definitely.
To get a good quality specimen
mm-hmm.
and then keep it, preserve it, and have it in a pot to show on courses, that's pretty rare. So yeah, it's not a service we'd roll out to the wider industry. So the informal way to say it is, I've got my insects, hands off, guys, that I'm not letting you play with them. They're my toys to keep. But, yeah, that's the way it goes.
Absolutely. So we've touched a little bit on sort of the use of software and AI to identify insects. In your experience, and sort of going to lean on a little bit of foresight here, but what do you foresee being the next big thing in sort of insect identification?
Ooh, do you know, there's so much going on. I feel a little bit possibly behind the times on some of the more detailed stuff that's coming through.
Mm-hmm.
There was a paper at the International Conference urban pests
yep.
in Barcelona 2022. And the researchers there, I apologise for not remembering the name off the top of my head, and the research facility, they were looking at things like the wingbeat frequency of mosquitoes
oh, wow.
to identify the species.
Amazing.
It looked fantastic. It seemed to work really well and maybe had potential to be rolled out as a practical thing that can be used.
Yeah.
It's not something I ever thought of, and that, I like that.
Wow.
There is the DNA side of things as mm-hmm. well. I've spoken to mosquito experts about identifying the difference between Culex pipiens pipiens and Culex pipiens molestus.
Mm-hmm.
That's a subspecies type that would bite humans, molestus. Yeah. Pipiens pipiens is a bird biter. And to differentiate those two, it would need the DNA work.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I'm still quite traditional, and we don't have the DNA facilities at Kilgerm, but we've got to keep an eye on these things.
Definitely.
That's probably the way forward and will be in other areas. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Absolutely. So I guess just to ask you one final question, just to start wrapping things up. We know we're currently living in a sort of period of change when we're talking about the planet Earth, shall we say. This is getting quite grand now, isn't it? Yeah, that's it. But, you know, we know that...
Meaning of life.
That's it. But we know, climate change is a thing. Temperatures are increasing. The Earth is heating up. With that sort of in mind, what do you expect, or how do you expect the current UK insect presence to be affected by that in the future?
Oh, yeah, this is really interesting. I would lean on some information from my colleague Josep Parnau from Spain.
Yeah.
I was literally... on a training course with him yesterday, talking about invasive ant species.
Amazing.
And he knows more about that than me because of being in Spain and the climate and so on. And I think the facts and figures were something along the lines of, in the last 25 years, there have been 30 new ant species recorded in Spain.
Oh, wow.
And that would be invasive species brought in via trade, transport, and typically movement of plants and plant material.
Yeah.
And that's a major route in. And I know that some of that would depend on climate in terms of the species becoming established.
Yeah.
But the movement of species is just phenomenal.
Absolutely.
People, trade, plants.
Yeah.
We're becoming truly global.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that fact really stood out for me. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. The human factor, the hitchhikers, the carriage of insects.
Yes.
Rather than their natural spread, it's that human-driven aspect to it really that interests me.
Definitely. It's interesting because obviously we think of Spain as being a hot country already, obviously a holiday destination for many. And for them to have, starting to experience those new species that are being brought in, with the temperatures that are increasing, it's only bound to change. And obviously we've been to the most recent ICE conference, where researchers from all around the world present their studies, and a lot of... sort of researchers from Spain, it was all about mosquito species as well, wasn't it? Moving from those hotter equatorial countries slightly up, and unfortunately Spain's first in the firing line, isn't it? But we can expect for that to start moving up towards the poles.
Absolutely. I think we're grateful for the government work that goes on.
Yeah.
UK HSA are monitoring for invasive mosquito species at entry points such as ports and airports, which is a way to sort of protect us from invasive species. And we're in regular contact with the non-native species secretariat.
Yep.
They have species alerts on their websites. And there are certain insect species on there that they keep keeping an eye on and have risk assessments for.
Mm-hmm.
And various aspects of government have contingency plans for dealing with invasive species. So we sort of rely on that.
Absolutely.
And gain information from them as well. And yeah, some reassurance there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good to hear. No, listen, Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Thank you so much. And I could see the joy in your eyes as we were talking about insects all day. So it's happy days. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Mike. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Thank you.
Perfect. Again, many thanks to Matt for coming on the podcast. Great conversation, as always. So this is it for this episode and for 2025. We hope that you have enjoyed this year's episodes and that you will join us again in 2026 for all the latest in pest control. For now, from all of our friends and colleagues at Kill Germ, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. See you soon.